to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. We are here for another live installment of our award-winning broadcast. It's Saturday evening, January 15th, and we are downtown in Memphis, Tennessee this evening, coming to you from our flagship radio station, AM 1380 WLRM, and also, of course, broadcasting to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org. It's great to have Keith Alexander back in the studio this week after a one-week hiatus. He took last week off and did a little traveling, and here we are tonight, Keith. We got the candles lit, little incense and peppermints burning here, and we were rocking out before the show. We're in the CFCC chat room. We're multitasking. By the way, folks, don't forget, you can join us in the CFCC chat room for a virtual fan party. It's taking place right now. CFCC.org, www.cfcc.org. Keith, I tell you what, you're living the life of a king, man. You had last week off. You look well rested and well fed, and you're ready to celebrate your favorite holiday of the year.
That's right. MLK Day, Martin Luther King Day, is coming up on Monday, and we're going to explore the significance of that and why we have this ritual obedience to Martin Luther King every year enforced upon us by the powers of political correctness in America. Plus, we've got a great guest. Tell them all about that new guest.
That's right. Well, we have a couple of great guests tonight. You're going to be hearing from them. We've got some treats lined up for you during tonight's second and third hours. But first, coming up, actually in the very next segment, we're going to break from our standard operating procedure and have a guest during tonight's first hour. It's something we don't typically do, but it's Paul Craig Roberts. Paul Craig Roberts is making a return visit to our program this evening. He was the Assistant Secretary of the United States Treasury during Ronald Reagan's first term. He is a syndicated columnist with Creators Syndicate, same outfit that runs Pat Buchanan's stuff. He was the associate editor of the Wall Street Journal, a professor at Georgetown University. Keith, a man with a lot of credentials. And he doesn't have a holiday named after him.
Yeah, no one else, in fact, no other individual in American history, either alive or dead, has a holiday named after them except for Martin Luther King. And we're going to explore why that strangeness is prevailing in America today.
Well, Keith, you know, I asked you at our pre-show dinner meeting this week, who has done more to contribute to American society, the garbage man who services your curb each week or Martin Luther King?
Well, it's obviously the garbage man. You know, we need to talk a little bit about this. First of all, Martin Luther King is a very flawed individual. You know, that would be putting it mildly. He was a plagiarist. He was a communist sympathizer and communist operative. He was a sexual and physical abuser of women, and he was a serial adulterer.
This is according to the FBI, of course.
Right. These are the records that were sealed by a federal judge back in the 80s and will not be reopened until the 2020s sometime, and I doubt that they'll even be opened then. They had to keep all this information from the public because the public, of course, would never have allowed this holiday to be made into law unless if they had known the truth. So they had to, the powers that be in America that wanted a Martin Luther King holiday had to hide the truth from the people. But, you know, we're not here to vilify Martin Luther King so much as we are to explore why the establishment in America, why the elites insist that we every year at this time watch, you know, all this grainy footage from the civil rights movement showing people being knocked down by high-pressure water hoses and attacked by police dogs. This is an occasion. Martin Luther King Day is an occasion to revisit the sainted halcyon days of the civil rights movement, which the left has identified as their finest hour, and thereby they put a benediction and a blessing and an endorsement and a validation on all of liberalism. That's why they, every time some minor figure, like I think a couple of weeks ago we were talking about Clyde Norman Brewer, an announcer on the TV stations in Memphis during the garbage workers' strike in 1968 involving Martin Luther King. He came out and said he was in favor of the garbage workers. And when he passed, you would think that Mother Teresa had passed, at least here in the local newspapers. And it, again, was an occasion to run all that grainy footage from back in the 50s and 60s about the Civil Rights Movement.
And as we've talked before, Keith, of course, the news cameras only rolled once the police had to retaliate to the riots and all of the plundering and pillaging, when they turned on the water hoses in reaction to all the looting and ruckus that was taking place. That's when, of course, the newsreels would roll, the cameras would be turned on, and the propaganda would go into full effect. And, you know, this is the only man, of course, the only individual, the only single individual that has a holiday named after him. We know what he was. We know what he is. And then you compare and contrast that, Keith. And we're going to be talking about this later on in the hour, too, after the Paul Craig Roberts interview. We're going to revisit our MLK coverage, which, of course, that wasn't even his real name. It was Michael King. He changed it. But nevertheless, we'll revisit that later on in the hour. But, you know, Keith, I ask you, with the remaining time we have in this segment, to compare and contrast a man who has received official sainthood by the American government. He's got his own holiday. Compare and contrast him with the legacy of people who are now vilified, other people who are being celebrated this week in the South, Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson.
You're right. In fact, in Mississippi, it's a dual holiday. You may either celebrate Martin Luther King Day on Monday or Robert E. Lee Day.
Who do you celebrate, Keith?
Robert E. Lee. Robert E. Lee was the only person to go through and graduate from West Point without a single demerit on his record. He was really a modern saint. Now, there's no one that could point to any dishonesty, infidelity, any sexual trysts, anything in his life. And as a result, he's truly the type of person that we ought to be holding up to the youth of America as a paragon and as a role model. Instead, we hold up Martin Luther King. The two major speeches that he was known for, the I Have a Dream speech and his, content of our character, I want my children judged by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin. Both of those speeches were plagiarized, as was his doctoral thesis at Boston University. Of course, Boston University admitted later on that they had proof, incontrovertible proof, that he had plagiarized his doctoral thesis, but they said it would serve no good purpose to take away his doctorate. Believe me, if you or I or anyone else had been caught plagiarizing our doctoral thesis, even if it was 20, 30 years later, they would have yanked it back in a heartbeat.
And we probably wouldn't have a holiday named after us either. And I have to keep beating that point. What a disgrace to this country to have a holiday named after a man like that. One more thought, Keith, and then I got to give the fans a little programming note.
Okay. The purpose of our program, though, is that, you know, the left never does anything by coincidence or by accident. Why are we celebrating Martin Luther King? Why do we keep celebrating all the deaths of these minor figures like Norman Brewer in the Civil Rights Movement? The reason is they want to keep the Civil Rights Movement, front and center in the consciousness of America, to give a benediction to liberalism and to validate it.
All right, we got to take a break, everybody. Paul Craig Roberts, when we come back, and then we're going to revisit the King thing later on this hour. Stay tuned.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show tonight. We're very honored to be able to introduce to you our featured guest for the evening. But first, let me just say, we are deviating from our MO this first hour, where an hour during which we don't typically feature guests, and we are featuring a great guest tonight, one of our favorites, and also Keith Alexander, who always co-hosts with me for the first hour, is brought in each week for his excellent commentary, but he is not really someone we bring in to interview the guest, and he will be handling this interview this evening, and we are excited about that. He's very well prepared and equally as excited as I am. Our guest tonight is Paul Craig Roberts, former Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Treasury, Associate Editor of the Wall Street Journal, and Professor at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. Dr. Roberts has been a columnist for Creators Syndicate, held numerous academic appointments, and is the author of several books, including his latest, How the Economy Was Lost, which was published last year. Dr. Roberts, welcome back to our show. It's always a pleasure to host you.
Well, thank you.
Dr. Roberts, this is Keith Alexander. I'm going to be handling the interview tonight. Let me ask you a question right out of the box from your, I think, most recent Vidair article, Spending Unemployment in a Collapsing Empire. You state that today the United States only has 11,670,000 manufacturing jobs, less than 9% of total jobs. Yet, despite America's heavy dependence on foreign manufacturers and foreign creditors, the idiots in Washington think that they are a superpower standing astride the world like a colossus. I recall hearing some months ago that in 1950, America manufactured 96% of the goods that we consumed. What happened? Who's responsible for this change? And for whose benefit has this change taken place?
Well, a number of things happened over time. In part, the United States State Department they gave away, for example, a lot of the textile industry. They would always raise quotas for countries that would cooperate with the State Department's foreign policy. That's the way they paid them. They gave away all the textile jobs that used to be up in New England, for example, and they came down into the South and started giving those away. So that was part of the story. Another part of the story is just that in 1950, we were the only country that could make anything. The rest of the world was either in destruction or smothered by communism or some form of socialism. So that it meant really that there weren't any products produced abroad that the Americans would be buying through imports. But what really brought on the serious rapid decline, which essentially wiped out a large percentage of the American middle class, was the jobs offshoring. And that started after 1991, after the Soviet collapse. Because when the Soviet economy collapsed, this created this notion of the end of history, and that capitalism had won, and so both China and India began opening to Western capital. Prior to that time, of course, China was completely communist. There was no way any Western firm was going to be allowed in there, and India was socialist, and they wouldn't let firms in either. Well, both these countries had massive unemployed labor, but capable. And, you know, the Indians have long been familiar with the English, and the Chinese are very good workers. And so what started happening was Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, and firms like that pressuring American corporations for improved earnings and better shareholder returns caused a great deal of American manufacturing capabilities to be moved into China because of the extraordinary low cost of labor, so that profits went way up.
Well, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, American corporations used to be run by economic patriots who felt that they were American companies, and they thought that they should benefit the American people.
Yeah.
There seems to have been a sea change in the outlook of the CEOs and the people running the companies, but that's right. Where the government in the past has stepped in and said, no, you're going to run your companies for the benefit of the USA. And suddenly there was this change where basically the floodgates were opened, and like you said, the State Department is giving away most favored nation trading status, like party favors at a movie debut. Who's benefiting from that? Is it Wall Street? Is it Jewish
right.
bankers? What's the deal?
Sure. Wall Street, shareholders, and the executives. I was gonna get to that. You see, Congress contributed to this when they passed the cap on executive pay. So Congress passed the law, and it says that any amount of money paid to an executive in excess of $1 million a year is not tax deductible to a corporation as an expense unless it's performance related. And so you had all these executives at these big corporations capped at $1 million unless they could show they had greatly improved profits in some way. And so the way you could do that was to move the production of your firm for the American market offshore and use very cheap labor. When this started, you know, you were paying Americans about $25 an hour, and you could hire Chinese in those days for about 25 cents. So the cost of production dropped enormously. The profits went up enormously. So that's when all these huge salaries started being paid to corporate executives.
But, Doctor, and back when the American experiment started, basically the federal government was run on tariff revenues, and tariffs would have applied to equalize the cost of foreign goods versus domestically produced goods. Tell me why charging tariffs has now been demonized. You're almost – it's next to being a racist, apparently, in multicultural America to be a protectionist. And how in the world are we going to be able to compete without tariffs and without protectionism?
Well, that was a point that a couple of billionaires raised, Sir James Goldsmith and Roger Millikan, who recently died. They said that it was impossible for Western countries to compete in free trade with low-wage areas when the Western countries took not just business know-how, but also capital, technology, and plant equipment into those countries to produce for their home markets. And they were right, of course. Now, the offshoring of jobs, though, has nothing whatsoever to do with free trade. Free trade is actually the antithesis of free trade. Free trade relies on a country's capital staying at home, finding its most efficient use, and producing the goods that it can then trade with foreign countries, allegedly doing the same thing.
Okay, Doctor, hold it right there. We've got to take a break. We'll be back with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts here on the Political Cesspool in just a few minutes. Please stay tuned. Okay, we're going to be talking about free trade and outsourcing and its effect on the American economy with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts on the other side of this break.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
As I was telling our fans who are gathered in the Political Cesspool virtual fan party right now, an online chat, I have got the best job in the world, at least for this hour. Here we are with an excellent guest, a well-credentialed gentleman who has been at the very pinnacle of power, and he has the right ideas. We're getting to interview a guy like this on our nationally syndicated program here tonight, and Keith's doing all the work. So you can't go wrong with that. I'm going to continue to chat with the fans for one more segment, and Keith, back to you and your great interview with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts.
Yes, Dr. Roberts, are you there?
Yep.
Any wrap-up on what you were telling us there in the first segment?
Yes, Keith. I think I know what it is you want me to get into, so I'll proceed with that. And I'll begin by completing my answer to your earlier question. Another thing that really changed everything were business schools, MBAs. It used to be taken for granted by American executives running companies that they had three constituencies. They had the shareholders, but not only the shareholders. They also had customers, and they had employees. So they had equal loyalty to the three groups. Now, what happened over time with Wall Street pressure and with the teaching in business schools, the only group that ends up with any clout or any attention from management is shareholders. So they've eliminated their concern for customers, and they've eliminated their concern for employees. In fact, now there is a policy that these companies use to get rid of older employees, find some reason to fire them, let them go, because for two reasons. One, if they're paying benefits, such as medical insurance, then the medical premiums are rising as the employee's age rises. And two, traditionally, the older people are paid more than younger people. So somebody gets to be 45, the company is looking to get rid of him and replace him with a 25-year-old, because the pay goes down, and also the medical insurance and the group policy goes down.
And not to mention the fact that affirmative action, again, puts pressure on management to replace these old white dinosaurs with various multicultural candidates for jobs. Quite frankly, anybody that joins a big company like General Electric or Microsoft or something and expects to have a long and profitable career and to retire at age 65 with a gold watch at the same company is living in a dream world, wouldn't you say, Doctor?
Yeah, that's going to happen to them regardless of whether they're white, black, male, or female.
Well, you know, the Fabian socialists back in the end of the 19th century, their goal, this is people like Sidney and Beatrice Webb, H.G. Wells, George Bernard Shaw, Oscar Wilde, was one world socialist government and the equalization of incomes throughout the world. And, of course, the name Fabian means they meant to accomplish this goal not through combat, not through revolution or bloodshed, but through gradualism. And it looks like it's bearing fruit, Doctor.
Well, I don't know about that, because if you look at the income distribution, it's getting worse and worse.
On the other hand, the incomes of people in India and China are going up, while the incomes of people in America, the typical American, the middle-class American, are either stagnating or going down. Isn't that correct, Doctor?
But it's got nothing to do with one-world socialism. It's got to do with the greed of the people at the top in America.
Well, it's got to do with the fact that we don't have economic patriots in charge of our economy and of our companies anymore, and they're more than willing to sell out the interests of the American people. Now, I'm a lawyer, and I represent a lot of people who are middle class and below in their status in society, and I can tell you from my experience that a large percentage of these people, if they're going to achieve a middle class income, have got to have a manufacturing sector job. And we've been talking about how the manufacturing sector in America has shrunk to 9% of the entire economy. Is there any way that America can come back without a manufacturing sector?
No.
That's the short and sweet answer to that. And, you know, that's the problem. Without that, if we had people running our government that had the best interests of the people that elect them to office in mind, they would be finding some way to get the manufacturing sector in America back up and running. But that doesn't seem to be a priority either with the Democrats or the Republicans.
No. The priority is to serve the powerful private oligarchies that provide the campaign funds.
And about government spending, it's always occurred to me that if one of the national parties decided the way to, you know, as you pointed out in your article, if you started cutting domestic spending, there'd probably be blood in the street, because I think probably approaching 50% of the population is dependent upon the government for their livelihood, either through welfare or from public sector employment now. I think I read something recently that for the first time in American history, public sector employment in America outnumbered private sector employment. So the way to save money would be to cut all of this foreign expenditure, foreign wars, foreign aid, foreign everything. You could probably balance a budget and not upset any of the citizenry at home. Why don't they do that, Doctor?
Well, the military security complex is too powerful, and also so many Americans are totally brainwashed, and they think that they're under attack by Muslim terrorists, and we have to kill them over there before they kill us over here, and all the other crap that the Bush-Cheney people spread throughout the system. So the Americans all support.
Well, the Obama people seem to be doing the same thing. You know, it's what do they say in the Who song? Here comes the new boss, just like the old boss.
And they don't have any comprehension that they're actually destroying their own economic livelihood. That's just the problem with so many Americans. They can't get out of that patriotic box that they're in. They can't see this.
Well, see, here locally we have politicians all the time just wringing their hands about bringing in good, high-paying jobs to Memphis, which is a majority black company, I mean black community, and there's no way in the world that, you know, that it's going to happen in this present economic paradigm, is it, Doctor?
A politician that tried would be, he'd be excoriated. He'd be held up as a traitor or somebody who wanted to help blow up the World Trade Center or something like that.
Well, now, you know, I remember,
get all
you know,
the story about the economic aspects because people are not aware of them. You know, one problem with the offshoring is the loss of middle-class jobs. And they don't just offshore the manufacturing jobs. They have been offshoring all of the professional service jobs that can be performed anywhere and sent in over the high-speed Internet. So that you now have a situation where university graduates, engineers, for example, can't get jobs because they can hire people in China or Indonesia or Russia or just about anywhere to do software engineering there for a tiny fraction of it.
Well, you know, one thing, manufacturing jobs are obviously portable. Some of these professional services are. But when I was, you know, let's say about 20 years ago, I said, one thing they can offshore is loading and unloading planes and trains and trucks in America, but they've managed to do that now through containerized freight. You know, rather than paying Americans American wages to stevedore and to unload ships and to load trains and things like this, they now apparently are sending stuff to Mexico so they can get the benefit of cheaper Mexican labor to do that. Everything's containerized, put on trucks, and sent up the NAFTA highway. So, you know, they're apparently using their ingenuity in every way possible to suck jobs out of the United States, and the American people sit here and do nothing about it, and they hear nothing in the mainstream media to alert them about the dire consequences and the dire circumstances they're in.
That's right. And then they bring in foreigners on work visas, H-1B visas, L-1 visas, take what few jobs that are still here. So Americans are essentially unemployed. There's been no growth in American incomes.
Okay. Well, let me propose one thing, Doctor, in closing here. Even a blind hog, as we say here in the South, finds a good acorn every once in a while, and I was taken by one comment in particular by Abraham Lincoln, who said once, America is so abundantly blessed with natural resources and so naturally protected by two large moats called the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean that I conclude that America must either endure forever or die by suicide. We could basically be self-sustaining economically if we chose to be, couldn't we, Don?
Well, not any longer, because most of the resources have been used up, particularly the oil. Dependent on oil imports.
Well, we have a lot of oil that is not being tapped, particularly offshore, and if we used it, I'd like to see how much we could use.
If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back to get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Yes, I'm back. I guess it's time to punt the clock again and get back to work here at AM 1380 WLRM. It was nice having a couple of segments off during the show. Thank you, Keith, for handling that interview with Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, a very esteemed guest. I heard from our producer you kind of ran into the commercial break, didn't wrap it up in time. So I wanted to allow you to convey to the audience just how much we appreciated Paul Craig Roberts being on the show tonight.
We really appreciate Dr. Paul Craig Roberts being on the show, and we look forward to having him on again. Let me respond to something that we were talking about at the very end. I was asking Dr. Roberts whether America could be self-sustaining economically, and his answer was no, because we've run out of oil resources. And what I was trying to say at the end, and I'm not sure it came over, is that I really don't think we have any idea what our oil resources are, because there's been an intentional misinformation campaign. I do know there's a drilling moratorium on any new drilling offshore. We are not drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. We're not accessing the shale oil reserves in Wyoming. We have so much coal, and if we use the coal for the production of electricity and energy for our utilities, as we should be, we'd never be running out of that. And I think we could get enough oil and gas and petroleum products out of the ground if we had companies that were selling it just to the United States, what we produced here to the United States, that we could be self-sufficient. And furthermore, we could develop some of these other resources so that we could not be so dependent on petroleum. You know, we have nuclear energy. The idea that we're using petroleum products to create electricity and power for our homes and things like this is absurd. That ought to be all going into motor vehicles, and we ought to be using coal and nuclear energy to produce the power and the utilities for our homes, James.
Well, Keith, you know,
why can't I be the energy czar?
When I get elected president, that's exactly what you'll be. But, you know, we are on a commercial radio broadcast here, and we don't have a lot of time left. We don't have very much time left at all with you. Actually, we still have 2 hours left. You only have 10 minutes, and I know you want to get back to celebrate Martin Luther King Day.
Okay, let's talk about another thing, another aspect of the Martin Luther King holiday and Martin Luther King's life. One of his primary aides and confidants and assistants was a Jewish gentleman named Stanley Levison, who was a card-carrying member of the Communist Party. But he wasn't just any member of the Communist Party. Alan Stein, who recently passed and was a tremendous resource to paleoconservatives with his research and his great intellect, pointed out that Stanley Levison was the focal point of Soviet money used in the United States by the Communist Party. He was the bag man. He was the guy that was given the authority to decide where the money could be used to best advantage, where they could get the most bang for the buck, and to direct that money there. And he decided early on that they could get the most bang for their buck through Martin Luther King. They provided him with all the money, all the seed money, all of everything that he needed so that he could front this movement. They saw the civil rights movement as the most destructive movement available for taking down the old American regime, and they did it, and believe me, they were right on target. Stanley Levison was such an out there communist that Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy both personally warned Martin Luther King to cut his ties with him, that he was going to cause disrepute to fall on the civil rights movement, and Martin Luther King would say he was going to do it. But then, 3 or 4 or 5, 6 months later, Stanley Levison would pop back up in another part of the King machinery and organization. So, you know, the accusation that he was a communist operative and communist sympathizer is not some fanciful notion. It's something that was very well documented by the FBI. But, of course, all these FBI records have been deep-sixed by one federal judge, and nobody gets to know that. So we're basically celebrating a fraudulent life. The left has invented this comic book fairy tale about Martin Luther King that we're all supposed to bow down and worship. Your children are worshiping it when they go to school. You're taking the day off of work to celebrate one man and one man alone. It's not George Washington. It's not Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, or any of the paragons or the really important people in American history. It's Martin Luther King.
Well, what are you giving me the microphone for? You're on a roll here, man. What are you thinking?
Wake up, James. James is James enjoys days off and minutes off and even seconds off down here on this show. But we need you to know that the reason, the real reason behind the Martin Luther King holiday is the same reason why every time some minor figure associated with the civil rights movement dies, we get another opportunity and excuse to bring out all this grainy footage. The left.
I love it, Keith, when you talk about the grainy footage that shows Rosa Parks smiling as if she were a mule eating briars.
Grinning like a mule eating briars, as we say here in the South, or a possum eating grapes. That was a staged event, totally staged event. It was not something that spontaneously happened as it was portrayed to be by the American people. They had a policeman who was part of the scheme. Rosa Parks was the head of the Montgomery NAACP. They had this whole thing orchestrated. They had the cameras there. They had the news cameras from ABC, NBC, and CBS on the ready for all of this. And it was a perfect example of media manipulation, all of this was. But the left looks to the civil rights movement as its home base. And unfortunately, with the rise of neoconservatism in America, most neoconservatives back in the 50s and 60s were liberals and leftists, and they agree wholeheartedly with the left that the civil rights movement was this righteous movement and that the left was really on target, and there can be no questioning the righteousness of the civil rights movement. And because of that, the camel's nose is in the tent, and we can never, ever defeat an enemy that we give a safe haven to, and the civil rights movement is that safe haven. You know, here in Memphis, it's gotten so ridiculous that a professional wrestler died named Sputnik Monroe, and they tried to give him the same treatment because in the late 50s, he wanted to let blacks into the wrestling matches up in the balcony. And the reason he wanted to do that was not because he was some great soul of conscience or reaching out or a civil rights advocate. He just wanted more money coming into the coffers of the wrestling association here in Memphis. But the left always spins this thing to its advantage. And, you know, quite frankly, it'd be comical if it were not having such an effect on the young of our nation, James.
Well, that's right. But unfortunately, Keith, the youth of our nation and many people of extended generations as well will be watching Oprah's show on Monday, and they will be inundated with the broadcast news coverage in every region of the country. And they are going to be, the brainwashing will continue. 40 years after the fact, I think this is actually the 25th anniversary of his so-called holiday. And, you know, here we are. The David against the Goliath on the Political Cesspool radio program, bringing you truth, and we're going up against the machinery of the establishment, Keith. But, you know, it's a role that we relish.
Well, people ask us why we bother to do this, because we're obviously like King Canute ordering the waves not to break on the shore, that the mainstream media is so insistent upon all of this that our message will be lost. Well, we think the truth has virtue in and of itself. The Bible says, you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. We think that the truth has a therapeutic effect on people's minds, and we need to be unabashed exponents of the truth whenever we can. Of course, the book of Hosea says, my people shall perish for the lack of knowledge. And we're going to provide that knowledge here on the political cesspool whenever we can. Martin Luther King himself is a minor operative. What is important is the use that is being made of him by the left.
Well, as I said, ladies and gentlemen, be sure to check out our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, www.thepoliticalcesspool.org, on Monday for our comprehensive coverage of the King holiday. And thankfully, after this week, Keith, we won't have to worry about it for another year.
Well, I thought Gordon Ball was coming on.
Gordon's going to be on next week. You want to talk to Gordon about that?
Well, Gordon is going to talk about that.
Okay. Then I guess we're going to talk to Gordon about that. I don't know. Well, the CFCC, you know, we're having this online chat at cfcc.org. They've got some great information, the truth about Martin Luther King, right there at the very top of the website. So join us in the chat and read some good information there, cfcc.org. And don't forget, folks, if you like hearing Keith on the radio, you'll love reading his thoughts. And his booklet, Liberalism and Its Effect on American Society, is available to anyone who makes a donation of $25 or more to our program between now and the end of the month. So go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, make a donation during this commercial break. We'll send you a copy of Keith's book, autographed. And there's more information about that on our site. We'll be back with the second hour right after this.
The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah! Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the 80s.